All right, everybody, welcome back to me and Susan Easton Black. I'm Clayton Pixton.
I'm Susan Easton Black.
And we're with the Joseph Smith Impressions of a Prophet podcast with Susan Easton Black. So, Susan, how's your week been?
My week's been actually pretty great. Always busy. Those are the great weeks, really.
Yep. Have you ever not been busy? I have a hard time imagining you not being busy.
No, ADD, I think.
Yep. Susan is an author of many books, a little over 200, I guess. And
Something like that.
She keeps busy doing stuff like this. She served four missions.
Four missions.
I still need to take you up on that psychological counselor one or something. Yeah. So we can solve some of my stuff.
Oh, I don't know. You can work on me.
Oh, okay. We have a trade. All right. Well, thanks for being here again. Today we're going to talk about the infamous extermination order, right?
That's right.
I'm going to kick us off here with a little number called I Have Work Enough to Do. It's in our hymnal. And it's, I don't know if we've sung it much. I've sung it much, but I like it. So
I like this one too.
Do you? Good. I have work enough to do where the sun goes down, for myself and kindred too, ere the sun goes down. Every idle whisper stilling, with a purpose firm and willing, all my daily tasks fulfilling ere the sun goes down.
Oh, that was great.
Thank you. I'm always very choosy with my notes. Yeah, anyway. All right, guys. Well, you're probably thinking, man, I'm getting all this stuff for free. I'm learning about the church. You used to have to pay tuition to get these lectures, Susan.
That's right. Thanks to you, we're sending it out to the world.
Thanks to me and what we're able to do here, you're getting it for free. So, Susan, please take us away and tell us how things go.
Tonight, we're going to learn about why the extermination order. I don't think anyone that listens today will want to name a child after Lilburn W. Boggs, the governor of Missouri that issues the extermination order, but we're going to do the buildup as to why he perhaps thought he had the right to do it. So if you're ready, Clayton, I am too.
I'm ready.
We recall that what we're looking at today is two counties in Missouri. Recall the Saints had started out in Jackson County. They're kicked out of Jackson. They go across the Missouri River to Clay County. And by 1836, they're kicked out of Clay County, and they move up to Caldwell County. Caldwell County was to be a type of almost reservation for the Saints. It's set apart for them. They've got borders there to stay inside. And basically, if they stay inside, all will be well.
Kind of like a pen.
Yeah, kind of like a pen. You know, you put your kids in a, you know, kind of crib, you stay in there, we're good. But when we get Joseph Smith coming to town and the church is going to go throughout the world, and suddenly he wants other towns and is willing to move into Davies County, it's going to cause all kinds of problems. Well, as we go forward, as just a review, we talked about the stake presidency with David Whitmer, W.W. Phelps in the middle, and John Whitmer, and they were the ones that came up and basically founded Far West. We know then that as Joseph and Emma come into town, that you've got a town that, wow, it's big. Recall there are five different general stores. There's two hotels. They look very prosperous. And you'd say life seems to be good, but as Joseph comes into town, recall he discovers that his presidency didn't pass out money to the poor. And Joseph and Emma literally struggle. Recall last time we talked about how they wanted the High Council to support them for a year. In other words, they don't have the funds, and the High Council voted no. We know that as Joseph came into town, that he begins to hold High Council courts. And as he does so, you'd say, who do we say goodbye to? Well, David Whitmer, one of the witnesses of the Book of Mormon. David Whitmer is now out of the church. Phelps, a man that wrote, "The Spirit of God like a fire is burning," and we've sung at every temple dedication since the Kirtland one, he's going to be out, and John Whitmer is going to be out. But what we're going to learn is that although they're out of the church, they stay in town. Now, a new element we add tonight is that we add there's a town called Richmond that's over in Ray County. And, you know, without sitting with all kinds of maps, we could probably pretty much get confused, but it's not that far from Far West. But Ray County, I don't know, it's like a rumor monger town. Every time something happens in Ray County, such as there was a case where someone stole an alarm clock, Ray County officials view it as their job to be sure and let the governor know. And that who's doing it? Well, it's the Latter-day Saints in Far West or their little communities. And whenever anything is stolen, when there's a disruption, where there's any kind of fight, off goes some kind of letter or missive to Lilburn W. Boggs, the governor, saying, we are very concerned. You know, the Latter-day Saints are on the, you know, like they're trying to start conflict, even kind of a war. And so Richmond, close by, obviously very nervous that so many Latter-day Saints are gathering over in Caldwell County.
And what kind of effort, if any, I guess, was there to be like, huh, these are some wild claims. Let's go to the Latter-day Saints, not the disaffected ones, but the, you know, the faithful.
Right. I mean, it seems like today it would be just an obvious, you know, phone call, text, hey, what's going on over there? But we can find no direct contact with the Latter-day Saints. But you've got Boggs with an eager ear to listen to what is the next complaint that's coming his way.
That's the impression I get.
Yeah. So we look at the Latter-day Saints, and you say we begin to set up new settlements. And one of the big settlements, of course, will be Adamondayaman, as Joseph's come into town, and he now views that kind of border around Caldwell County, a reservation for the Latter-day Saints, much like Native American reservations. He views that there's no way we are spreading out. Now, our new settlements, how they did it, went like this. They used pretty much like a wagon wheel design. If you were to say, where's Far West? You'd say it's in the middle. And we're now founding other communities. Typically, you'd go out, and they're always called spoke communities. So you'd say there's Far West, and every community they're going to try and found will be about 30 miles from the next, because it was viewed if you had a pretty fast horse, within a day, you could go from one community to the next and have a place to stay and food to eat. And so like a wagon wheel, with Far West being the center, the Latter-day Saints are going to found many little small communities that become known as the spoke communities there in Caldwell County and soon moving into Davies County. Now, of all the spoke communities, that kind of captures the imagination, the fantasy, the feelings of the saints as the years have come and gone, that you see saints, if they go to visit Far West, they'll say, well, we can't leave until we've seen Adamondayaman. And Adamondayaman, one of the very few words that I know in Adam's language. You know, so you go, hey, are you bilingual? I go, oh, sure, Adamondayaman, right? But Adamondayaman, we'd say, was the place where Adam gathered his posterity and told them all things that would happen through what we now call time, right? And Adamondayaman, at some future date, will be an amazing gathering of 144,000 high priests. And all the leaders of the various dispensations will return and, you know, hand their keys, their authority, you know, all coming back to Adam. I've always thought, well, I want to be the news reporter there. You know, Noah, take it away. You know, how bad was that flood? You know, and, you know, all the ones that will be coming. So Adam on Diamond, very important as they were setting up their new settlements and a fledgling settlement, but actually big enough that a new stake presidency is called in Adam on Diamond. So it wasn't one of those really smaller settlements like Hans Mill, but it's a fairly well-established settlement. And at some point in our history, later on, will become even more significant.
Well, one of my favorite places.
Yeah, favorite places, right?
It's great.
Good.
Yeah.
So you'd look and you'd say, well, what comes out of Far West? We learned last time tithing comes out of Far West. So if you enjoy playing tithing, you can say, well, that comes out of Far West. And I personally have been blessed for paying tithing. And the official name of the church, you know, you start out as the Church of Christ and they come up with different names. But the Lord then by revelation gives a full name of the church and, you know, no more nicknames. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's something really great that comes out. Well, back to our story and the time frame. What we're going to find then is that those that have been cut off, they called it cut off back then, or excommunicated from the church, they chose to remain in Far West. They have houses, they have property, they actually have businesses that someone's running for them, and they're staying there. So David Whitmer's there, Thomas B. Marsh is there, Orson Hyde is there. All these ones where courts have been held, they remain in Far West. Now, you can imagine they've got a lot of negative things to say about the church and Joseph Smith, and obviously having an impact on their faithful neighbors. You know, you can think your faith is really strong until your best friend starts pointing out things and you go, huh? And before you know it, I mean, you got to know where you stand to be solid. But they remain in town, and it becomes an irritant to some. No one, it seems, more than Sidney Rigdon. So Sidney Rigdon, Samson Avard, and others form a group called the Danites, or the Sons of Dan. And they
I didn't know Sidney Rigdon was
And
part
he's
of that.
a counselor to the prophet Joseph. I mean, he's right there, first counselor. And you're like, Sidney, what are you doing? It's such a harebrained idea. But with these Danites, their job is to, as they view it, is to encourage the dissidents like David Whitmer to move along. And, you know, they're actually not nice about it. They're, you know, they're forceful about it. They're vengeful about it. And you get these men that were, you know, have lost their membership. And suddenly they feel like their lives are in grave danger. And you'd say, where do these men run? And I go, David Whitmer, he runs to Richmond. It's your closest town to Far West. W.W. Phelps, he's going to Richmond. John Whitmer's going to Richmond. And the list goes on and on. They all run to Richmond. And you can imagine this rumor monger town is going to embrace them. Because suddenly they're saying, wait a minute, what's your news? Great, I'm writing another letter to Lilburn W. Boggs. Because now, guess who's coming out? Some of their leaders and a great concern. Good.
People don't realize that even an insider, once they've been excommunicated or even though they were, I don't know, their view of their former church community might be tainted. It's like that doesn't occur to people. It's
They
still don't think, well, maybe we should still talk to somebody who's a faithful member. you know, to see, you know, to see, they just kind of, it, even these days, right, they just kind of will take anybody's testimony or story or side of the story, especially if they're, they came from the community, but yeah, but there's definitely this principle of, especially if they had been, and if they left, their feelings are even more antagonistic and
yeah, antagonistic, bitter, hurt, don't know how to deal with it, telling others often.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so the Danites, never a part of the church. Everybody got that? You know, it's not, you know, you can't find it. We've got deacon, teachers, priests, there's no Danites, right? But it's like this secret organization within membership of the church.
And they met at night or something?
Yeah, they met at night. And none of it good. Well, you'd say things are brewing, right? But when's going to be flaming fire? And it's going to occur on July 4th of 1838. Although Joseph Smith was in town, you know how you get these small towns, they want the man of the day. They honor the man of the day. We want you to give this speech. And July 4th was, well, it's big in Provo today, but it was really big when you're talking about my father, my grandfather fought in the Revolutionary War, fought for our freedom. And so of all the men in town, Sidney Rigdon was invited to give the main speech there at the Independence Day celebration, where you've got parades and you've got, you know, games and square dancing kind of thing. Okay, and notice what he says. From this hour, we will bear it no more. He said, mobs that come on us to disturb us, it shall be between us and them a war of extermination. And by this point, you know, you've got the dissidents, you've got some of the Missourians crossing over into Caldwell County, thinking they have a fun night and disrupting life among the Latter-day Saints. So notice he's the first to say, it shall be between us and them a war of extermination. We will follow them to the last drop of their blood is spilled, or they will have to exterminate us. In other words, he's just throwing out this amazing challenge. He's such a loose cannon on this day. And remember, word is going to pass. It's going to Richmond. From Richmond, it's going to Lilburn W. Box. Well, from July 4th until August now, everything is just kind of sitting there. But in August, there's what's called the fight at the polls, and it occurs in Gallatin, Missouri. And what our side of the story is that voting first will be the Missourians, the Latter-day Saint men, and notice women didn't vote back then, so it's all men. So the Missourians vote first. Here come the Latter-day Saints to vote. And the Missourians lock arms with each other and they refuse to allow any Latter-day Saints in to vote. Now, you realize that's a constitutional right. We care about our vote. You know, we want our man to win, and the only way you win is through voting, right? And so the Latter-day Saints are not allowed to vote. And eventually, Latter-day Saints are milling around until you get one man, John Low Butler, picks up his stick, and now he begins hitting another, one of the Missourians. I don't know whether we really got to vote that day, but it's always called the fight at the polls. And once there is a fight at the polls, Governor Boggs now calls out a pretty restricted militia force, and their job is not to exterminate. So notice it's kind of like step one, let's get this under control. What the job of the militia, and every county had their own militia. So Clay County has a militia, Jackson County, and you'd say Southerners, that's amazing. They lost the Civil War because when they put on a uniform, they can be pretty ferocious. And so what their job was is you drive all those Latter-day Saints, they were calling Mormons, now back into Caldwell County. You get them out of Daviess County. You get them out of Ray, if any are still down. And you push them all. They need to stay in that Caldwell County, that kind of reservation. So the militia forces now begin to push the Latter-day Saints, and they're forced out of their homes. And what's so interesting, they're only going to ask two questions. First, do you believe Joseph Smith's a prophet of God? And if you say, well, I used to, but I don't, you're fine. Okay. But if you say, yes, Joseph is a prophet, the next question, do you believe the Book of Mormon's the word of God? And if you say yes to both, wow, man, you're subject to be beaten, a woman verbally, physically abused, a child, you're subject to be kidnapped, because after all, you'll just grow up to be like your parents. And so very, very dangerous. The militia would then take, literally come into the home as you get families running, and they're always running towards Far West. Or it's like the spokes of the wheel are collapsing, and they're running towards Far West. And as they run, then the militia will go in, and they'll take the cows, the horses, the tools, the clothes, the whatever you leave behind.
This always sounds to me like the Zoramites, who, you know, after Alma and Amulek had preached to them, mm-hmm. they kind of found out the minds of the people, and if they, you know, they kind of waited till the end in that case, and when they knew who believed in their word, they kicked them out of the city.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. So like it. Well, at some point, you'd say, who's the man in charge of this operation to literally push and pull and get all the Latter-day Saints back in Caldwell County? His name is John Clark. Where is he from? He's from Richmond. And he's then the number one man that Governor Boggs has put in charge of this, push him forward to Caldwell County. Well, at one point, the Latter-day Saints have had it. They don't want to keep being pushed. In other words, we're hearing what you did to our friends in the other little community. And as we begin to hear this, we're going to fight back. In other words, we're not going to move. And the dates here become important only because of how fast it moves. So Latter-day Saints were being pushed until October 25th, 1838. And the Latter-day Saints will make a stand. And the stand will be at a river called Crooked River. And it's always called the Battle of Crooked River.
Is there a town that's near that?
It's pretty close to Far West, actually.
Okay.
So that's where the stand will be. The leader of the Latter-day Saint forces will be David W. Patton, an apostle who is called on this occasion Captain Fear Not. In other words, he is going for it. There will be shooting on both sides. There will be death on both sides. One of those that will die from the wounds of that battle will be David W. Patton. And when they carried him to his home, they were giving him priesthood blessings, and he was literally motioning, he wanted hands off the head. He was ready to go. So October 25th is our first fight back. And at that point, we'd say, what is the letter? And it's called an affidavit. What is the letter affidavit that goes forward that literally turns Boggs' hands? Notice he has the militia on the trail. They're moving quick. But what will turn it into an extermination order will be an affidavit sent by two former leaders of the church, Thomas B. Marsh, and the second signature will be Orson Hyde. And they now send, indicating that about Joseph Smith, they viewed Joseph Smith as a modern Mohammed, and that he is arming Indians, that he has 14,000 guns. I mean, they just go off on all of this. Well, okay, Governor Boggs, what's he going to do? Notice what he has. He's been hearing all these rumors coming from Richmond. He's now got dissidents that have run on to Richmond. He's now hearing that there's been a battle. The Latter-day Saints are fighting back. And Governor Boggs now issues what's called the extermination order. So notice how quickly it comes. October 25th is our first fight back, Battle of Crooked River. 2 days later, you get, here's Governor Boggs, October 27th, 1838. And notice what he says in his order. He says in his order, he says, you know, here's your big line, that the Latter-day Saints must be driven from the state. In other words, there is no place in this state that Latter-day Saints can live. And notice what we're talking about. I mean, Missouri, you've got St. Louis. You know, you've got other towns, you know, Independence. I mean, we've got, you know, kind of Missouri's built up on the edges. But he's saying they must be driven from the state. And you're talking about people who trace their heritage, many of them, to Revolutionary War heroes. And some of the Latter-day Saints had actually fought in the War of 1812. But notice the choice. You drive them from the state, or he now gives license to his militia to exterminate them. In other words, you have a choice. You can keep driving them. This time, you're not just driving them to far west, but you are to drive them out of the state. And then at your will, you could exterminate them with basically no questions asked. So, and it's a legal right to kill.
Yeah, so obviously totally unconstitutional. What? How long did it take for, I don't know, Missouri or whatever to be like, oh, wait a second.
I actually went back there at one point when the governor finally took it off the books. But I can remember as a kid going through Missouri and, you know, dad would stop at the border and say, we're entering Missouri. What are you going to do if somebody asks you, is Joseph a prophet? Is the Book of Mormon the word of God? And, you know, then it was David O. McKay was the prophet. And you're like, oh, drive fast. You know, I want to survive this state. So never enacted, but stayed on the books for a long time.
What do you mean never enacted?
I mean, once the saints have left the state and some were exterminated, then you'd say you can look in the 1850s and the, you know, 20th century. You don't find anybody going back on this book saying, hey, we killed them, because that's still on our books.
Oh, right. But they did. Yeah. They also didn't remove it until
lifetime. Nothing was removed quickly, that's for sure.
Incredible.
Incredible, right? And so with that, as the extermination order is issued, more and more small militias are now being called up. One of those called up, this is a picture of Alexander Doniphan. Doniphan received a letter. He was in Clay County, and that he is being moved up in rank to a brigadier general, and that his first order, as he was to gather the troops there, the militia, and militias included all able-bodied men from 18 to 45. As he was to gather up his men, his first assignment was to exterminate the Latter-day Saints. And, you know, you got to love this man. He's not like a perfect man, but, you know, he just hated things that weren't just. And I see him like some amazing movie hero, you know, who, as the letter is being read to him, says, the day of extermination is over. In other words, you know, many had exterminated the Native Americans and pushed them out of their states. But for Doniphan, he goes, the day of extermination is over. And he jumps up, he'll take his men, but will not allow them to participate in any of the fighting or killing of Latter-day Saints who are now being driven out of the state. So you'd say, well, what happened to this perfect kind of wagon wheel. Far West is the main, you know, the middle, and then all these spoke communities. One by one, our little spoke communities now collapse. And so the target is really going to be Far West, by far your largest settlement. But one by one, they're going to collapse. We're just going to feature mostly one. I wanted to feature the Hans Mills settlement, named after a man named Jacob Hahn.
And I've seen his name is also, it's spelled H-A-W-N, but also H-A-U-N.
U-N, yes, you can find it both ways. And so Jacob Hahn had a mill. Many of the poor from Kirtland had stopped at Hahn's mill and were employed there by him. But what we're going to find is they're going about their daily activities, right? As we see the next, we're going to find that they look up and they see these militia lined up in a row. And you know how you see something and you think like it's a mirage, and they come out, they're looking, you know, what is this? They haven't heard.
They hadn't heard the extermination order.
The extermination order. And this is about 3 days after the extermination order. And suddenly they hear the word charge, and they see these militia just coming in on their horses. And as they came charging into town, some of the men now will run to the blacksmith shop. And how it used to be in these little towns to kind of protect yourself and children from, a gun accidentally going off, you'd put it in the blacksmith shop, because the blacksmith always had a lock on his door, where you couldn't guarantee locks on these log cabins, right? And so many of the men ran into the old blacksmith shop, and it turned out to literally be their death chamber. And some young children had been playing in there, and it turned out to also be very difficult for them. So as the men are being harmed, the women are told to run and to get across the river. And so they will head out then across the river. And, it's not a big one. In the meantime, you'd say, well, what were the atrocities? One man named Thomas McBride, a militia man, had a cornhusker knife and literally chopped his body into pieces. And you go, well, you know, there's no Geneva Convention. I mean, you know, it's war at its worst. Well, we then look and say, well, what happened to Adamon Diamond?
Can I say about Hans Mill? That just reminds me a little bit. Is that the one I'm thinking? This whole thing kind of reminds me a little bit of in the Book of Mormon, where the Lamanites come against the Nephites because they think that this community had abducted their daughters. It didn't turn out to be too, but they never took the trouble to ask, hey, what, you know.
Yeah. Was it you guys?
Nobody kind of verified any of this stuff. Nobody, they just kind of. Yeah.
No talk. And, you know, there's a heroine out of this, Amanda Barnes Smith. She loses her husband in this attack on Hans Mill. She has one child that has part of his hip blown off.
Alma.
She claims she saw in vision how she should pack it, you know, and militia men come to her and say what they'll do to abuse her. And basically she's, I don't care. I'm not leaving here till I can walk out with my son. And by the time Hans Mill is attacked, Joseph Smith knows. You know, there's not like you don't have Pony Express, you don't have telegraph. And these things are going on. In the meantime, life goes on in Far West. But suddenly people are now running into Far West. They've made it, and they've got amazing news. And the news is they're being attacked. So you look, you'd say, where are they really attacked? It's always your outskirts. And so Adamon Diamond, totally destroyed. I mean, you go there now and it's beautiful green grass, and it's, you know, pretty, pretty beautiful as you look at the farmland and all of that. But, you know, you're not going to find a house there. And then you look and you'd say, well, what else, what other towns are collapsing? And as you do it, you say goodbye to DeWitt. We had Latter-day Saints in Gallatin. That part is destroyed. And finally, we get ourselves too far west.
Which today is kind of looks a lot like those other communities.
Right.
But it's just, there's nothing. There's nothing.
I mean, there's no gas station there. You know, getting there on county roads. There's nothing. And so by this point, Joseph is saying, prepare far west for an attack. Now, how you would prepare your town, it's curfew. Everybody's inside, but you decide which part of the town you're going to save. So, you can't save the edges, right? You're going to move in, and part of the way to prepare a town is that you take your wagons and you flip them on their side, and it's like, I flip my wagon, Clayton, you flip yours, and pretty soon we've got a little fort around the area we're going to save. And you got your men with your guns. This is a part. And so far west, they're willing to give up some of the town, but obviously they're going to save the center, because the center is where you have all of your business communities. It's kind of like those little town squares going around the edge. Mm-hmm. So closer you are to the center, the better chance of being prepared. So as far west is being prepared, the militiamen now move in, and they are surrounding far west. And by this point, Joseph knows that these other communities are gone. And as they surround his town, Joseph turns to this man, whose name is George Hinkle. And George Hinkle was actually the head. He's doing a weird wave. I'm not quite sure he's got, but it's the only picture we have of him. But he's the head of the militia there in Caldwell. Joseph asks him to, get your troops. He's the one militia that Boggs didn't call out, but now he's got his troops. He's preparing the town, and he decides to go out and talk to the military leaders. In other words, white flag. You kind of have a no man's land, and then here's your militia coming around. And he goes out to talk to them to ask, what can we do to save Far West? In other words, Far West isn't a fledgling settlement like Hans Mill, but Far West is a pretty built-up town for its time period. And the answer is, you give us the following men as prisoners. And we'll spare far west. So one of the men that Hinkle then agrees is, I'll give you Joseph Smith.
And it was also Sidney Rigdon.
Sidney Rigdon, Hiram Smith.
Okay, yeah.
Parley P. Pratt, just a couple others. But Hinkle, when he tells Joseph, hey, I've been outside, I've talked to militia, we can save the town. He doesn't say they want you as prisoners. What he says is, you come on out and they just want to talk to you. And if they talk to you, then everything will be okay. Maybe we can solve this. So Joseph leaves the safety of the far west that's being protected, as well as Hiram and Parley and Sidney, and they head out with George Hinkle, and once they're out of the kind of safety zone and they're with the militia group, George Hinkle says, here are your prisoners. And Joseph turns to George Hinkle and he gives him a new name. And the name he calls him is Judas Iscariot Hinkle. So... for Joseph is now turned over to this man whose name is Samuel Lucas. And Samuel Lucas, he's from Independence. He's a court kind of stenographer, but he's not such an important guy in Independence, but he is important on this occasion. Now, as Joseph is turned over to him, and word goes throughout the militia units that they've got Joseph Smith and they've got Hiram. They've got Sidney Rigdon, who had, you know. And all of a sudden, the men begin to howl like wolves. And it's always called the night the wolves howled. And that night, listening to the kind of howling sound, as you see Joseph and the others now taken captive by these militias, listening to the howling sound will be Mother Smith and Joseph Smith Sr. Joseph Smith Sr., as he hears the howling sound and guns being fired in the air, he is sure that his sons have been killed. And he says to his wife, "I cannot live but another moment." And what I think is so interesting is that, you know, you wonder, can emotions really get you? And I'm like, oh, yeah, for sure. But for Joseph Smith Sr., although, you know, Joseph and Hiram had not been killed, although he had, you know, you'd say fairly good health, by 1840, he's dead. He never kind of resumes it. He never quite gets it back, the kind of shock of the night, the howling then of the wolves. Well, from there, Joseph, others, they're literally tied to trees. And as they're tied to trees, we kind of leave them there knowing that next time we meet, there's going to be a military tribunal, a court martial. Notice how quick this all came down. You get, recall the Battle of Crooked River, October 25th. You get the extermination order, October 27th. Hans Mills going down about the 30th of October. And next time we meet Clayton, October 31st, Joseph Smith is being tried for treason against the United States by a military tribunal. And he will not be allowed to attend the tribunal. But various preachers who have come along with these various militias, they're there. Lucas, judge and jury, and you're like, what the heck? But that's where we kind of leave off tonight.
And not only that, but Joseph Smith and those men weren't part of a military force, right?
Right. Not, I mean, it's so not illegal. I mean, you know, a military tribunal against someone civilian. Who's just, yeah. citizen of the United States. So it's
wrong
amazing story. You know, so maybe as an aside, it might be interesting what happens to these people. You know, we talked about some key people. Jacob Hahn, you know, he survives Hans Mill, right? But George Hinkle goes on to form his own church. And he calls his church... the Church of Jesus Christ, I get that. But then he says the Bride of the Lamb's Wife. And I'm like, huh. His church short-lived, doesn't make it. Bride of the Lamb's Wife.
Okay.
And then you'd say, well, what about Samuel Lucas? He never really rises up. You know, it's his one day of, you know, possible glory, but hardly. And we're going to learn a lot more about Doniphan, even take a whole time period to learn about him. I think he's just such a hero, a man for the right time. And we'll hit some of that. For Boggs, he goes on to California. Parley P. Pratt indicates that he was so mean, nothing would grow on his grave. And he's buried out there in Napa, California. And, you know, now things since 1976, when the extermination order is rescinded, you know, I have seen his grave and, you know, things do grow on it. And did they in the past? I don't know. But so it is. Anyway, so many interesting things.
Yeah, my lesson is if I'm ever in a position to, there's a small group of people who I'm hearing horrible things about, right? And, you know, something needs to be done about them. It's just outrageous. And I'm going to be like, okay, let me pause here. Let me talk to to somebody in that group. Let me talk to maybe the leader, some other people. Let's verify this before we like break every constitutional rule in the book. And yeah, and probably not break those ever, no matter what. All right, well, are we ready for my little outro music? Okay, we'll try verses 2 and 3.
Great.
I must speak the loving word ere the sun goes down. I must let my voice be heard ere the sun goes down. Every cry of pity heeding, for the injured interceding, to the light the lost ones leading, ere the sun goes down. As I journey on my way, ere the sun goes down, God's commands I must obey, ere the sun goes down. There are sins that need confessing, that need redressing. If I would obtain the blessing ere the sun goes down. All right, guys, thank you again for being here. You can find more out about some of Susan's writings if you look up wherever you buy books and stuff. Might check out the new fancy shiny one, Joseph Smith Impressions of the Prophet. Susan, what else do you have to tell our listeners before we sign off?
Well, I think Clayton's great. We've had a lot of fun doing this, and you know, we're going to get to the end of the line. We're well over halfway through.
Yep, this is an amazing experience for me.
For me too.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you next time. Mm-hmm.